You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we are going to be talking about something you may see as you walk around. You may see a couple, a single person, an elderly person with a sparkle in their eye, a twinkle in their eye, pep in their step, a smile on their face, and you might be saying to yourself, how did I get here? How are they there? And how am I where I am? What we're talking about is a sparkle. Do they have a sparkle? What is a sparkle? How do you shine together as you age? Shine with those around you? Shine with your loved ones? And what do we mean by shine? It's give off this essence of vibrance, this vibrance of health, both mentally and physically. That's today's show. We're going to be talking about neuroscience of longevity through our acronym of SPARKLE. What is SPARKLE, you may ask yourself?
Yeah,
what is that? SPARKLE? SPARKLE is seven things we can do in our life presently and as we age to have the most vibrant life. Number one, S stands for stay socially active. P, prioritize sleep. A, active lifestyle, do stuff. R, reduce stress together as a couple. K, keep learning. Think about the K as keep learning or knowledge. L, love and emotional support. And E, eat brain-boosting foods. We're going to talk about all those things and how they'll impact you cognitively, mentally, and physically. You ready? We'll continue on. So today, by the end of today's presentation, what you and we will learn, because we always learn through these presentations, don't we?
Yes, a lot.
How to maintain a healthy and active lifestyle as you age. You'll learn the importance of exercise, movement, and flexibility to stay strong and independent. You probably know these things already, but we'll reiterate them to you. How activities like walking, Tai Chi, and strength training support both brain and body health. There are many more activities as well. How nutrition impacts brain and body health. The best brain-boosting foods, for instance, salmon, nuts, berries, leafy greens, to protect memory and heart health. What are the harmful effects of processed foods, sugar, and unhealthy fats on aging and brain functions? Well, that's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more. There's more things we're going to learn today. We're going to go over the role of stress, sleep, and social connection in aging well, how stress affects the brain, and ways to reduce it through meditation, deep breathing, and mindfulness, why sleep quality and strong social relationships are key to preventing cognitive decline. And then finally, how small daily habits can prevent age-related diseases like Alzheimer's. How lifestyle choices, exercise, diet, sleep, learning, and emotional support can slow brain aging. The science behind neuroprotection. Neuroprotection, that sounds something to do with the brain. How about brain plasticity and lifelong learning to keep the mind sharp? Just like your body and you need to exercise to keep physically fit, you need to do brain exercises to stay brainfully fit.
Yep.
We looked up one of the authors who wrote a lot about this subject. I believe his name is Yiyong Tang. He has, I believe, over 260 papers written about this subject or similar subjects on his own and with others. We took a couple of his papers and others that he's written with, and we've studied them to come up with the basis of today's presentation. So number one, we're going to talk about performance neuroscience. So there's a study of neuroscience in performance, how that does and how that fits with performance, just performing well, whether that's in a job or on a baseball field or maybe performing well in life. Mm-hmm. So you want to look at that a little bit here?
Sure.
So what is performance neuroscience? It's the study of how the brain and body work together to help us do things well. This includes thinking and learning, like solving math problems, physical movement like playing sports, handling emotions like staying calm when nervous, performing in tough conditions like running in extreme heat, and learning new skills like playing the piano. Mm-hmm. So all these things are mind-body connections.
Yeah.
So we have thinking, we have physical body, and we have emotions, and these are all in this encapsulated in this neuroscience.
You need to be aware, because some people do this and are automatic, you know what I mean? So you need to be aware that you are doing the three stuff in one.
Yes, and that's where the mindfulness comes in, and there's this where the slow exercise comes in, and some of the things we will be chatting about today. Mm-hmm. What else do we have here? Let's continue on with performance neuroscience. It is the study of how the brain and body work together. So we want to look at the understanding of the differences in people's abilities through neuroscience, keeping our mind and body healthy for better performance. And scientists will study how the brain, nerves, and body chemicals work to help us be our best, or sometimes in the opposite way, well, they'll help us not be our best. But the idea is in performance is to do our best. They'll also find ways to improve performance in school, sports, work, and life. So maybe we're not in school anymore. Maybe we're not in sports that much anymore. But maybe we're in life.
Maybe.
Maybe. We don't know. We're not sure of that. So there are seven main areas of performance neuroscience. And these are all interrelated. This whole show is interrelated between everything. And we'll continue on with it. Each of these areas explains how different parts of the brain help us perform well. Seven different parts with multiple things in our brain that affect our performance. Cognitive performance, thinking and learning. This is how well we focus, remember things, solve problems, and make decisions. When you study for a test, your brain organizes and stores information so you can remember it later. I just saw a video on learned. It had to do with learning to not succeed. It's not like learned incompetence, but it was teaching a student to be frustrated so they couldn't learn more. And they had two groups of students in the classroom, and they gave them words that they had letters rearranged. And the one group had letters rearranged like bat, and they had to rearrange the word into another word, and from bat they could rearrange it to tab. And then the second one was something like dog, and they could rearrange it to God. And then the third word was much more difficult. The other group had two words to begin with, which were impossible to rearrange to make a third word. Both groups had the same third word. So let me go back to the second group. So one group had two easy words. The other group had two words that they could not rearrange into a new word. Both groups had the same third word that could be rearranged into a third word. So this is considered learned helplessness. So the group that had two easy words that were able to be rearranged, believed and solved the third word. The other group, which couldn't solve the first or second word, when they got to the third word, which was a longer word, they figured, we can't solve it. So they got really frustrated and they became helpless. But this is where this neuroscience kicks in.
Yeah.
And you can learn to be incapable. Mm-hmm. And some of it has to do with how you're taught. And some of it is how you're learning. Some of it is Are you eating the right foods? Are you sleeping? Because you can, if you're really tired and you can't figure out something.
I guess the emotional impact you learn. So if you are frustration, reduce the capacity to get it.
That is true. And that's the third piece of the neurosciences is the emotional piece. Mm-hmm. Emotions really can block things from happening. How about our second avenue in neuroscience? Motor and sports performance, moving and playing. So now we're in the physical aspects of things. This is how our brain controls movement, balance, and coordination. For instance, a soccer player's brain helps them run, kick, and aim at the same time. They're doing many things fast. Now, going back to your point, in order to do something fast, sometimes you have to do it slow at first so you understand the intricate mechanics of it. If you're learning to play a guitar, you don't immediately play as fast as you can. You learn how to do the mechanics correctly, slowly at first, so your brain-body connection is sharp.
Yeah.
If they immediately just said, okay, do this, frustration.
Yeah.
So what do we learn from there? Let's continue on. Emotion regulation, exactly what you were talking about. What do you think about that? Emotion regulation and resilience. Handling emotions. This is how we stay calm under pressure and bounce back from failure. If you lose a game, your brain helps you learn from it and try again if healthy. Some people, if they lose a game and they're not healthy and they have a bad emotional connection to their body, it can prevent them from doing well the next time.
Yeah, so I started to read a book about how the brain works when you learn. And they mentioned that sometimes the technique for teaching, you cannot be so emotional because maybe it's not a good way to attach. Like people say, no, I want to be excited when I learn something, but you need to balance because be so emotional sometimes can be positive or negative.
Depending on the student, right?
Yeah. So this is no maker that you really absorb all information.
So everyone's different. Mm-hmm. In ways. So what else do we have here? Number four, performance in extreme environments. So how does our body and brain adjust to heat, cold, high places, and stress? A firefighter's brain helps them stay focused in extreme heat and danger. So again, people react differently. So if you are going to be a firefighter, it will either be somebody who is able to stay focused and work on the task in that extreme situation. So somebody who wants to become a firefighter will either have those capabilities or have to learn them, but you can't potentially be a firefighter if you can't handle that stress, right?
Yeah.
What else do we have in performance neuroscience? Training. How training and skill learning, how to get better with practice. This is how we improve with practice and experience. For example, a musician's brain strengthens certain areas after they practice more and more playing of an instrument. So the brain gets stronger. You're doing a physical activity which connects your body to your brain and your brain grows.
Mm-hmm. And if you have the habit is more strong also. So habit you create by repeating.
The habit. The attention to, what is that called? What is the word you say? I remember the seminar you gave many, many years ago, and you were up front and you were saying, not resilience, discipline.
Yes.
Discipline.
Is more strong than smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See? Lizette remembers. I don't remember because she's disciplined.
You don't have discipline in your mind. I know that.
So performance neuroscientists also study, just in case you were wondering, individual differences, why people perform differently, just like we were talking about. This explains why some people are naturally better at certain things and how training can be customized depending on the person or group. Example, some kids are naturally fast runners while others are better at puzzles. But with practice, both can improve, but they may need different techniques to achieve that improvement.
Yeah.
And it may not be that they'll both get as good as each other, but there are different ways that are more appropriate for each. And then finally, the last and seventh way that performance neuroscientists study humans and the brains would be health and performance. Why health matters in performance. This is how physical and mental health affect performance. Example, if you eat healthy, sleep well, and stay active, your brain and body work better in school, sports, and life, especially as you grow old with your wife. Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. Today we're talking about sparkle. It has to do with the neuroscience of performance as well as the neuroscience of life and how we can succeed and be better and healthier physically, mentally, and cognitively as we age or even tomorrow. Those are the things we want to do. We just talked about the neuroscience of performance. Let's sum it up with these number of things. Why this all matters. Understanding performance neuroscience helps students learn better and stay focused. Athletes can train smarter and avoid injuries. Workers stay productive and stress-free. Artists and musicians improve creativity. And finally, doctors and soldiers perform well under pressure. These are only a few of the ways the performance neuroscience works. But again, cognitively, how we think, physically, how we move our bodies, and then emotionally, mentally, how we deal with stress, how resilient we are to situations, how we work when there's a lot of pressure on us. And so that's what we study. We are moving into another area of focus. We were talking about ADHD before. I guess it was a couple hours back. And we talked about that there are different methodologies for ADHD. For one, they are talking about biofeedback as being a new way to address it. If you've seen an ad on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, it has to do with this item you put across your forehead, and it measures the blood flow to your prefrontal cortex, which in that case they think, oh, you're thinking, which means you are focusing on something. And so they have training where somebody will do a video game, and the more that they can get biofeedback from this device, that there's more blood flow in their prefrontal cortex, they think they have now better focus.
Or maybe they stop pressure on your blood.
And all the blood comes to it. The studies show that although this technique could be promising, a lot more studies need to be done. They also say some of the negatives are some of the training involves video training, like playing games while using this device, which basically distracts you with this game rather than focusing you on life. So there's a lot of give and take. There's a lot of positive and negative. But the reason we were talking about this is neuroscience. One of the studies is how to get people that have ADHD or those tendencies to become more focused. And one of the main things was mindfulness. So that goes back to paying more attention to what you're thinking about. Let's understand attention and how we can train it, how our brains decides what to focus on. Attention is how our brain decides what to focus on. It's like a flashlight in a dark room. We can point it at one thing while ignoring everything else. But attention is not just looking for something or at something. It's also thinking, listening, and feeling. Scientists study attention to understand how people can focus better, learn more, and stay calm under stress. Same, almost the same things we were just talking about in performance neuroscience. In the past, scientists thought there were two types of attention. One was voluntary and one was involuntary. Voluntary was you make a choice. It takes effort and is controlled by the thinking part of the brain. Example, when you do your homework, use voluntary attention to block out distractions and focus on the task. Involuntary attention is like reflex attention, no choice. is controlled by emotions and instincts. You hear a bang, a slap, a clap, and you look in that direction. You aren't having to think about that choice. If someone shouts your name, you turn your head immediately. That's involuntary. That was the old way of thinking about it, but scientists in studying neuroscience have come up with a third way, which is, guess what? Mindfulness attention is called effortless focus. It's a mix half and half from voluntary and involuntary. You choose the focus, but it feels natural and effortless. It takes work and practice. Example, when you get lost in a good book, you focus deeply without even trying. It's almost like when you start to watch a movie and you're just kind of getting into it and you're paying attention to everything else that's going around you, and then all of a sudden you find yourself an hour into the movie, or you're reading something and then all of a sudden a half an hour goes by and you're in the book. So you made an effort to do something at the beginning, but then you just got carried away and it wasn't a choice you're making every second, like you need to sometimes when you need to focus on a conversation with somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's not involuntary where somebody says, Lizette, you know? So that third kind of attention, mindfulness, is something very good to have. Some of the features is it helps us stay focused without feeling tired because we're not working at it. It's linked to the relaxation system in our body, slowing our heartbeat and helping us stay calm. For example, imagine holding a snow globe. If you shake it, the snow swirls everywhere, like a busy, distracted mind. But if you let it settle on something, on an object, the snow gently falls to the bottom like a focused, calm mind. I think that's a good example, because mm-hmm. you can think of all the things going around us as a big swirl. But if you can just say, let me just focus on this one activity, and you can just let all the other things settle, then it's not a stress.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when I have to put dishes in the dishwasher. Mm-hmm. If I'm in the right mood, I can do it and not really think about it. But a lot of times I just get stressed because it's a weird thing and it's hard to describe to you. But I sometimes have a hard time working on a task because I feel like it's going to take forever. Like, I don't just do a task. There's just me. Maybe it's you too. Maybe you don't like doing things. But I don't think the word's not like. It's like it just feels like a lot of effort, because I have to focus on this rather than just do it. And
I guess the point is you are interested in doing something. So because when you play game and your iPad, maybe you don't feel this stress because you enjoy doing that. So you need to set up your mind to enjoy put the dishes. And then you enjoy to do and you don't feel stress. It's just how you set your mind.
And whether it's enjoyment or mindfulness is that if you can decide that this is how you're feeling and you understand the feeling and you understand that the feeling is maybe something that's preventing you from success in an area, and you go, I understand I feel this way now. So if I understand my feeling and go, it's only an emotional reaction that is programmed into me from something that I grew up with, maybe it was Jimmy, you know, like somebody calling your name every 2 seconds and you get really stressed. And now it's...
Let's suppose that you're alone at home. And
where's that sound coming from?
Exactly. Many people in the show believe that I call you Jimmy.
No,
you are alone at home.
It's not Lizette.
I am in trouble.
Every week. I think it's Alexa. I think Alexa's talking to me. Maybe it's Siri. Who knows?
Whatever it is. I hope it's Alexa.
It's not serious.
It's not serious, neighbor.
Oh, my gosh. What else we have here? So here we go. How does emotion affect attention? They can control where we put our attention. Fear and surprise grab our involuntary attention. Happiness and curiosity help us stay focused on things we enjoy. Like Lizette said, if you can find a way to enjoy what you're doing, enjoy the process, enjoy the outcome, then maybe you can stay focused on it. Disgust makes us look away or avoid something. Scientists say that emotions are very important for attention. People with ADHD find it hard to focus on boring tasks, but pay close attention to exciting things.
Yeah, so that's its own ACD selection. If you like something, so now I'm thinking like that. If people say, oh, I have this, how you drive? So if you drive, you see the plan and you're scratching every time. So many accidents is for people with,
That's why I drive quickly and change lanes all the time.
Yeah, I don't get it, but it's okay. It's science.
That's how it is. So the example of a student who is bored in class and your mind drifts away. But if the teacher tells a really funny story or interesting story, you suddenly can pay attention again. Or maybe you're trying to figure out something that you're like, I can get this, I can figure this out, and then you pay a lot of attention. But who knows? It can be any of those things. What else do we have going on here? So where in the brain does attention happen? Do you know where?
I have some idea.
Somewhere, in the brain, somewhere. So the brain has been studied, and scientists have figured out what part of the brain controls attention. This was very interesting. Voluntary attention is controlled by the thinking brain, the frontal cortex, that frontal part that they were testing with the biofeedback device. Involuntary attention is controlled by the emotional brain, the amygdala. When someone yells your name, or you're fearful, or you're scared, that the emotional part of your brain triggers the involuntary attention. However, mindfulness attention is connected to both. It's a full brain activity. The brain is like a team of workers. One part plans and focuses, the voluntary attention. Another part reacts to danger, involuntary attention. And another part keeps the team working smoothly, mindfulness attention. So mindfulness connects the thinking brain to the emotional brain, kind of manages both.
Yeah.
You know, so you need to hire a manager for your brain from inside your brain. So working on that is
he's development.
So here I am at 75 years old having to learn how to develop that.
Good, you have time.
Training, oh, we were just talking about how do you do it? Training attention to improve focus. Scientists have tested different ways to improve attention. Mindfulness training helps people stay focused, calm, and less stressed. Breathing exercises, slow, deep breaths can increase voluntary attention. And then biofeedback training, like we spoke about, using technology to measure and train attention skills. Example, athletes and musicians practice mindfulness to stay calm and focused during big performances. I wonder if when an athlete or musician plays the activity in their mind before the activity, like if you know people think about in NLP, there was the, you look at, let me in my mind practice this thing. So I'm not physically doing it and I'm not just automatically doing it. That you're like going through the motion in your mind, is that developing mindfulness?
Can be. I always thinking when I'm doing something before.
You plan ahead of time. Yeah. How am I going to do this?
Yeah.
Okay. So that could be a way. Mindfulness and mental health. So mindfulness attention can help people that have stress and anxiety. It helps people stay calm. ADHD, it improves focus without needing as much effort. Depression, it helps people pay attention to positive experiences. For example, the student with test anxiety can use mindfulness to stay calm and focus on the questions instead of panicking. Again, it takes work, it's training, it's working on it. It's not just, oh, I tried that and it doesn't work. Right, just like lifting a weight. If I can't lift it the first time, maybe I have to go with a lighter weight, practice until I get stronger, then I can work on a more intense situation. Here's some new research on attention training. Scientists have tested different attention training methods, including using brain scans to measure attention, studying how distractions affect learning. testing new ways to help people with ADHD. One study found that paying attention to breathing can improve focus, memory, and mood. Another study tested video game-based attention training for ADHD. Example, some schools now use mindfulness exercises to help kids focus better in class. So there was a study that I was reading earlier today and I was telling you about where they were measuring the amount of testosterone and cortisol in the saliva of kids who are under a lot of stress. And they then took half the kids and they taught them mindfulness techniques. And they saw that the level of some of the chemicals went down in comparison to others in that same stressful situation. So they were able to use thinking about stress, thinking about how they felt, thinking about their overall, I'll say, essence, rather than just that momentary stress, to help calm them down. Part of that was thinking, part of that was breathing, but it was techniques to help reduce the stress.
Okay. Produce or reduce?
Reduce. Help reduce the stress. Okay. I'm sure thinking can produce stress too.
Yeah, yeah. You just see the news and immediately.
It's gone. It's the stress is there again. So finally, why does this matter? Why does this matter? Understanding attention helps students learn better and stay focused. It helps us as well. It helps athletes perform better under pressure. Workers can stay productive and manage stress better. People with ADHD or anxiety can improve focus without stress. Finally, by training our attention, we can improve how we think, feel, and perform in everyday life. And when we come back, we'll talk more about sparkle and how to get that twinkle in your eye in cognitive, physical, and mental health. Victoria experiences the past, present, and future while sleeping. Will she be able to decipher the mystery of the symbols, messages, and images of her dreams before it is too late? Discover the lives she lives while Victoria dreams.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about sparkle. We're talking about the neuroscience of mental, cognitive, and physical health. We're going to talk about now how that helps us as we age. That focus on mindfulness, on mental, on cognitive and physical health. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Let's move into it. How to keep the brain and body strong as we age. Why healthy aging matters. One, aging affects the brain and body. Memory can slow down, muscles can weaken, and hearts. How many hearts do you have?
Many.
The heart and lungs can work harder as you get older. Alzheimer's disease is a big concern. It affects memory and thinking, making it hard for people to take care of themselves. Healthy choices can slow aging and protect the brain. Exercise, good food, and stress management all help. Scientists study how aging works. They look at genes, brain, chemicals, and the body systems to understanding aging better. So this is how we study the body, the brain, to see if we can slow the aging process and improve cognitive, mental, and physical health. Right? We don't want to limit our abilities. How physical activity keeps the brain and body young. Moving the body helps keep the brain strong. Scientists have found that exercise can prevent brain diseases like Alzheimer's by increasing blood flow and brain chemicals that help memory. It can keep the heart strong. Exercise helps the heart pump better and lowers the risk of heart disease. Strengthens muscles and bones, which helps prevent weaknesses and falls, which can be dangerous for older adults. Also, older adults that do have physical limitations, have less ability to socialize, less ability to get fresh air. They have tendency to potentially be more depressed because of limited physical capability.
Yeah, like it's like the loop.
In a loop. By not getting that extra oxygen in, by not getting the heart pumping, by not being as healthy, then also mentally they can be impaired as well.
Yeah.
So they're not as active. And that was something, there is a lot of studies that show active body, that strengthening your body actually does build the mind. And we talked about this earlier, just learning to play guitar or learning to drum or learning to dance, where you're connecting your brain and your body, not only builds the physical activity, but your brain actually grows. Neuroplasticity is not just a read a book and learn. It's when you learn a new physical activity, it also is building a component in the brain that's attached to that physical activity.
Yeah.
So physical activities and the brain are inextricably linked. They are connected. How does it keep the brain and body young? It improves lung function. Stronger lungs help people fight infections and breathe better. It boosts brain's chemicals. Exercise increases IGF-1, a chemical that helps the brain grow and stay sharp. Reduces stress and improves mood. Exercise releases endorphins, which makes us feel happier. I was just reading this thing about beans. I think I sent you that beans, the fiber in the beans, if we eat them regularly, can feed our gut bacteria, and then our gut bacteria can produce chemicals like what's the one? I know it's dopamine is one of the second ones, but the precursor, the thing that helps us sleep.
Serotonin.
There you go. So our gut bacteria is, I think, 90% responsible for our brain chemicals. That a lot of it starts there. And by feeding yourself the right nutrients, you can produce the right moods with the right sleep, exercise, breathing, reducing stress.
Yeah.
And it's as you said, it's a big cycle. You can cycle up or you can spin down. Which way do you want to go? Let's see what else we have here. Best exercises for aging well. Would you like to know what they are?
Sure.
Here are a few. Walking. Just walking keeps the heart strong and improves balance. Resistance training, lifting weights, prevents muscle loss and keeps bones strong. Stretching and yoga keeps the body flexible and reduces stress. Dancing, great for the brain, balance, and social connections. So I read a lot for older men and women, heavy weightlifting, not just light weights, but heavy, where you're actually stressing the bone and the cartilage and the muscle, can help keep the bones healthy. And so there's a lot of different studies on that, but part of what we do is we do lift weights and we also walk and sometimes we run and we do other exercises. And part of that is to keep the body strong, get oxygen also, right? So doing aerobic activity.
Dance. Drink.
Here's some
water.
More.
Drink water.
More exercises. Tai Chi. We talked about that earlier. Slow flowing movement exercise that improves balance, focus, and relaxation. It is especially helpful for older adults to prevent falls and reduce stress because it's an activity that maybe they're more capable doing than maybe a more intense martial art. Qigong, gentle exercise that combines movement, breathing, and meditation to increase energy, improve focus, and reduce stress is another. Grandparents who walk every day, lift weights, and do Tai Chi can stay strong, think clearly, and live longer. Even those who aren't grandparents can do that. You don't need to have children who have children. What if you have puppies? Is that okay too? Okay, fine.
It's a stress, I hope.
How does nutrition help the brain and body age well? What we eat affects how we think, feel, and move. Good food choices can help prevent memory loss and diseases like Alzheimer's. Certain foods protect the brain while others can speed up aging. Which ones do you think speed up aging? You want to know some of the best brain foods, and then we'll go into some of the worst ones.
Go ahead.
Citicoline, a nutrient that helps memory and learning, found in eggs, fish, and beef liver. Omega-3 fatty acids, these are things that are good for the brain, by the way, help reduce brain inflammation and support memory, found in salmon, walnuts, flax seeds, and chia seeds. When you're doing Tai Chi, you can do Tai Chia. Fruits and vegetables, packed with vitamins that fight aging and keep the brain sharp. The best ones include berries like blueberries, strawberries, and blackberries, help protect memory. Leafy greens like spinach, kale, and broccoli can improve brain function. Avocados provide healthy fats that help brain cells. Nuts and seeds are great for heart and brain health. Almonds, walnuts, and sunflower seeds are especially good. Despite all those pop-up influencers who talk negatively about some of these things. Oh, these things poison you. Yeah, there may be negative things that are in these things, but they're in such small quantities, you would need to extract them. But the greater good is in there as well.
Yeah. You know? The only point is no process.
Processed foods are terrible, especially those with preservatives. I mean, if you can get you get a loaf of bread that lasts for 4 weeks, but you buy one in a bakery and it lasts for 1 day before going stale. Well, if this one's preserving the bread by not allowing it to dry out and not allowing bacteria to actually attack it, when your stomach, which is full of bacteria, tries to eat bread with preservatives in it,
it's like, what?
It throws its hands up. Mm-hmm. And it just saved the stuff in there until it can digest it. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it can be.
So processed foods are really difficult. So we talked about, here's some other ones, some other foods. Whole grains can help keep blood sugar stable, which is important for brain health, found in oats, brown rice, quinoa, and whole wheat bread. Dark chocolate, high in antioxidants, which protect the brain from aging. Choose dark chocolate with at least 70% cacao. Depending on how you pronounce it. The point of that is that you can get these really, really dark chocolates that are like 90, 93%. So there's very little sugar in them, and they may not be that sweet. There's a positive point to this, too, is you might eat like a couple little pieces and be like, okay, I've had enough. Whereas when they're sweet, you can eat 2-3 candy bars. Who would do that?
I know somebody doing something.
So sometimes some things are good for you, but just be careful, right? What else do we have? Green tea contains brain-boosting chemicals that help memory and focus. We have, for example, if you eat salmon, walnuts, and lots of colorful vegetables, you can protect the brain and help people stay sharp as they age. So we would want to do that, wouldn't we? Stay sharp as we age. What are the bad foods?
Go ahead.
Bad foods, sugary drinks, soda. Fruit juices with added sugar, they will spike your blood sugar and harm memory. Fast food, fried chicken, burgers, fries, high in unhealthy fats and damage brain cells. Processed meats, hot dogs, bacon, sausage contain chemicals linked to brain decline. They also have heavy doses of materials and chemicals that stop them from the preservatives that stop things from digesting the meat, which means you eat them and it will stop you from digesting the meats. They may taste great, they may be enjoyable, just limit the amount. And that was the processed meats. Continuing on, here's a couple of more. Artificial sweeteners, found in diet sodas and low calorie snacks, they may interfere with brain function. Excessive alcohol increases memory loss and weakens brain connections. For example, eating salmon, berries, and nuts can improve memory, while drinking soda and eating fast food can harm the brain. A lot of the material we say kind of repeats in a way from section to section. It is to reiterate the importance of eating well and trying to avoid the things that are bad for you. How stress affects aging, do you think it does?
A lot.
It does. Chronic long-term stress can speed up aging and make memory problems worse. Scientists found that stress can lead to Alzheimer's disease by damaging brain cells. How stress hurts the brain and body. It raises cortisol levels, causes inflammation, weakens the immune system, which can make the body more likely to get sick and affect sleep. Poor sleep makes memory problems worse. Again, we were talking about the cycle, the downward cycle. Mm-hmm. Bad health creates problems with memory. Maybe with bad memory, you forget to eat well, you forget to do exercise, or you're anxious, or you're depressed, and you just don't want to.
You don't sleep well.
And then you don't sleep well again. So what are the best ways to reduce stress? Mindfulness and meditation help the brain stay calm. Deep breathing lowers stress hormones. Exercise releases happy chemicals that reduce anxiety. Social connections, talking to friends and family keeps the brain engaged. Example, practicing deep breathing and talking to loved ones can help older adults feel less stressed and keep their brains healthy. Going on a jog with your significant other and talking about the weather, talking about that next vacation, talking about how the weekend's going. You're doing your breathing, your exercise altogether. You're doing your socializing. Mm-hmm. Going to an escape room and trying to figure out how to get out of that escape room. That could be a mentally stimulating way that is a physically active way and socially active way. One of the things we enjoy. The role of genes in aging and in Alzheimer's. So there's a number of genes, and we're going to skip through this quickly. There's a number of genes that are related to Alzheimer's as well as aging. So there are genes that slow down aging and reduce brain inflammation. There's ones that can increase the likelihood. In any way, can we change how these genes affect us? Yes, even if someone has a gene that increases their risk of Alzheimer's, a healthy lifestyle can help reduce the chance of getting the disease. A person with a family history of Alzheimer's can still protect their brain by exercising, eating well, and reducing stress. You're not sentenced to the diseases of your family just because they had them. You may have a higher likelihood, but with better nutrition, sleep, exercise, reduced anxiousness, you can reduce the chance of that happening. How about heart, lungs, and brain working together in aging? The heart changes over time. The blood doesn't flow as well. Exercise can keep the heart strong for longer. It reduces the risk of strokes and memory problems. Lungs and aging. The lungs become less flexible with age, making it harder to breathe deeply. Smoking, pollution, lack of exercise damages the lungs faster. We were also just reading about how a number of months of intense exercise that's pushing your oxygen levels to their limit can reduce your age, age on paper, by 10, 15, 20 years in just a few short months. But it's intense workout. So you can, and that's not like go from 60 to 30. It's go from, if say you're 50, instead of having lungs like a 60 or 70 year old, you can bring it back down to maybe how they were when you were 40. Mm. So you can improve to a point that you then go backwards in time compared to how you were 10 years ago. So
that's good.
Yeah. What else do we have here? Keeping the heart healthy and keeping the lungs healthy. Exercise, not smoking, deep breathing, walk and do breathing exercises. Heart, lungs, and brains can be kept working well. Finally, with sparkle. Remember, this is today's show. One, stay socially active. Friendships and community keep the brain engaged and reduce stress. Two, prioritize sleep. Quality sleep protects memory, brain functions, and overall health. A, active lifestyle. Regular exercise keeps you strong, flexible, and mobile. R, reduce stress together with your partner. Managing stress helps prevent brain and heart disease. K, keep learning and growing. Get that knowledge. New challenges keep the mind sharp and engaged. L, love and emotional support. Love those around you and feel the love of those around you. A strong relationship reduces anxiety and improves well-being as well as supports you in times of anxiousness. E, eat brain-boosting foods. A balanced diet protects memory and heart health. Finally, get sparkle. Shine together as you age. Today we went through a whole bunch of things. The idea is the neuroscience of longevity to have a strong cognitive
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.